While they were busy talking, the ground dropped out from under their feet. He scrabbled about him for something to cling on to, but the vegetation nearest to them had drawn back out of reach. There was only the mud, thick and confining, sucking him down. The others were yelling all around him, and from what he could see, were just as badly off as he was. The mud began moving, circling round in a churning, determined way, like a slow-motion whirlpool. It was already up to Owen's waist, and he was still sinking. He fought to stay upright and tried to remember what he'd heard about dealing with quicksand. You were supposed to be able to swim in it if you kept your nerve, but when Owen tried to move his legs, they barely responded at all. The viscous, sucking mud smothered his movements easily, thick and clinging and bitterly cold. The circling speed of the mud was increasing all the time. Owen tried to see how the others were doing, but the mud held him firmly now, creeping up his stomach towards his chest. He held his arms above him, but there was nothing to cling on to. A great sucking sinkhole appeared in the center of the whirlpool, pulling everyone towards it. Owen could hear the others shouting as the speeding mud carried them around, but they didn't seem to be making any sense. By now, he was shouting too, and doubted he sounded any different. His constant struggle to stay upright and keep his face out of the mud was tiring him out and getting him nowhere. His heart pounded frantically, and panic threatened to overwhelm his thoughts. Owen took a deep breath and forced himself to be calm. He was being carried inevitably closer to the sinkhole, the churning mud and grasses moving faster and faster. He tried to summon his maze powers, but so much was happening he couldn't calm his mind enough to call them up. He tried to reach out to the surrounding foliage, looking for something to grab onto, but it was all well beyond his grasp. If he couldn't go to the foliage, maybe he could bring it to him. He still had his disruptor in his hand, held up out of the mud to protect it. He aimed carefully and shot a nearby tree dead square at the bottom of its wide trunk. The splintered remains of its lower trunk and heavy roots held it in place. The surging mud brought Owen sweeping around and slammed him hard against the black trunk. The impact knocked the breath out of him, but he clung desperately to the trunk with both hands, and it held him in place, even against the steady pull and pressure of the mud. The others also hit the trunk as they came around and clung to it and to each other. And after that, it was only a matter of strength and determination to drag themselves slowly along the tree trunk and pull themselves out of the mud and onto firmer land. They crawled a safe distance away from the sucking mud and then collapsed on their backs, letting the rain slowly wash the mud off them. They lay there for some time getting their breath back, until finally Owen forced himself back onto his feet. He beat away some more of the mud from his legs and waist and glared at the slowing whirlpool.
That was no accident. We were herded here. The jungle wanted to be rid of us. On some level, it must be aware, capable of cooperating against anything it sees as a threat.
Hazel sat up slowly.
So, how are we going to get to St. Bee's mission if the whole damn jungle's determined to stop us?
Well, we just have to be more determined than it is.
Oz, am I aiming properly?
A little more to your right.
Owen blasted an opening in the foliage with his disruptor. He waited till the crimson vegetation had closed together, and then borrowed Hazel's disruptor and blasted it open again.
From now on, we take it in turns to keep blasting a trail, using our guns in sequence as they recharge, backing it up with explosives as necessary, until the jungle learns to respect us and allows us to go where we want to go.
And in the end, it was as simple as that. The jungle eventually got fed up with being incinerated and blown into small pieces, and went back to opening up a path as the party dictated. The scarlet and purple vegetation shook angrily around them for a while, but made no further moves to threaten them. Owen continued to lead, weapons at the ready, carefully checking the way ahead for booby traps. The rain kept falling. Everyone was soaked to the skin, and they were all shuddering from the cold. Any normal human would have been in serious trouble by now, sliding into shock as their core body temperature slowly decreased. But all five of the party had been through the maze, and Moon was a Hayden man. Along the way, as much to distract himself as anything, Owen brought Bonnie and Midnight up to date on the background of St. Bee and her mission. When the rebels finally won the war on Technos 3 and put an end to the fighting, Mother Superior Beatrice didn't feel she was needed there anymore. So she returned to Golgotha and set about rebuilding the established church by throwing out all the political and corrupt elements. Turning the quasi-military organization of the Church of Christ the Warrior into the pacifistic Church of Christ the Redeemer wasn't easy, But it helped that the Saint of Technos 3 had a huge popular following, not least due to Toby Schreck's docu-footage of her working as a nurse in the Slaughterhouse Field Hospital of Technos 3, and that the majority of the church wanted change. Most of those who would have objected either died in the rebellion or were on trial for crimes against humanity. But after achieving this miracle, Mother Beatrice found herself declared a saint on all sides, especially by the media, and this upset her greatly. She didn't see herself as a saint, and detested the media interest that followed her everywhere. As soon as the new church was up and running, she renounced her leadership and went to Lacrimae Christi to minister to the lepers. They seemed to need her more than anyone else, and it was possibly the only place where the media wouldn't follow her. Before her involvement, lepers were just dumped where their ship landed and left to live or die as best they could. Supply ships were infrequent. Saint Bee changed all that. She used her influence and contacts to get food and tech and medicines dropped on a regular basis, and built her mission into a spiritual and communication center for the whole leper population. And all went well.
Till the Hayden men came, augmented serpents in paradise.
Damned if I'd call this place paradise. Why did she contact you, Owen, and not me? Or Jack and Ruby?
Apparently Jack and Ruby are off somewhere on a mission of their own, and she probably thought I'd be more approachable.
More of a soft touch, certainly.
My life's been tough enough without having God mad at me.
I never really thought of you as religious. You've broken enough commandments in your time.
I'm what the Empire made me. As for being religious, I was raised to believe in the families first, the Iron Throne second, and God when I had time. But of them all, only my faith in God remains. That was always a personal thing, irrespective of the established church, then or now. I like to think that someone out there watches and cares. How about you?
I believe in hard cash and a loaded gun.
Bunny and Midnight nodded more or less in unison. Hazel would have left it at that, but she could see Owen wanted more.
I live my life by my own rules, and I've always had problems with authority figures. If there is anything after this life, I'll deal with it when I get there. As for Saint Bee, all right, she's done a lot of good in her time, but so have we. She saved lives in her hospital, and we saved whole worlds by killing the right people. In the end, which of us made the most difference? Let history worry about it. I have more immediate concerns.
Saint Bee was a volunteer, an arista who gave up everything to minister to the needy. We were all dragged into the rebellion, kicking and screaming all the way. So when she asked for my help, I couldn't say no, not to a real hero. And how does God reward me? Crashes my ship and strands me on a leper colony. Thanks a whole bunch, big guy.
Hazel looked at Bonnie and Midnight.
Didn't you have anyone like Saint Bee on your worlds?
Nah. The church fell apart after the rebellion. Nothing's really replaced it. We live for the day and let eternity take care of itself.
In my empire, the church found a new role after the rebellion. Everyone is a member of the Church of Christ the Warrior now, but it is a mystical order rather than a religion. We have seen what force of arms can do. Everyone is raised to be a warrior from childhood on. The people will never be weak again. We have no room for saints, for the weak or the meek, for those who don't have the faith to fight for what's right.
I can see you and the Mother Superior are going to have a lot to talk about. Where do you stand on all this, Moon?
The Hayden men believe in the Church of the Genetic Crusade, the perfecting of man. Man becomes God eventually. I don't believe that anymore, but I'm no longer sure what I do believe. So much has changed since I went through the maze. I touched something there, something much greater than myself. But whether that was the maze or something the maze put me in touch with, and afterwards I died and was brought back to life again. At least, the Hayden men repaired my damaged body. My thoughts, my memories, my self should have been lost forever. But here I am. I have no memories of being dead. Owen, you said I spoke to you, even after I was killed by the Grendel.
You did. I heard your voice down in the caverns of the Wolfling world. You told me the right code sequence with which to open the tomb of the Hayden men. Without that, everything would have been different.
Then I too have something to discuss with Mother Superior Beatrice. Even if it is only the exact nature of guilt. I shall be interested to hear her replies.
Hold everything. Back up and go previous. I think I must have missed something along the way. Why why the hell do the Haydenmen want this bloody planet anyway? I mean, there's no tech here, no mineral deposits, just an old crop of plants with attitude, and colonists will have to count their fingers after they've shaken hands. Why would the Haydenmen waste troops and resources here when there must be other places that need them more?
The Haydenmen presence here is a complete mystery to me. The colonists are hardly the right material for being made over into Haydenmen, and the planet isn't suitable for a base or a nest. I can only assume there is something of a unique nature here that they desire, that is as yet unknown to us.
Well, if we stumble across any of the invading army, try and leave one of them alive. I'll hold him down, and Hazel can ask him questions.
I've got a question of my own, for St. B. Namely, what the hell are just the five of us supposed to do against a whole invading army with no ship, weapons, or backup?
Maybe she's hoping for a miracle.